What's up, homeboy?
Hey!
How you doing? Going?
I am doing so very well. Thank you so much for asking. How about you?
I'm great, man. I'm really excited to have you on the show. I haven't talked to you in like forever, probably since like your graduation-ish.
That's what I think it kind of has to be.
Which was, nuts. Remind us all.
That was 2015. It's he said with so much confidence.
Eight years ago.
I know I don't know if that feels like too long or not long enough. I have no idea.
I mean, here's the thing that you can grab a hold of and smile about. You do not look like a man who's been out of undergrad for 8 years. You got a nice, young, fresh look to you, my friend.
Hey.
It's hey, aging stop. Well, the Noah Reese.
Ah, I do what I can.
So if you've heard of the show before, you know, I only really have the one stock question, and I'm so excited about this because I don't actually think I know the real answer to this, like the in-depth answer, but where are you from?
So always a fun question to answer, because my family like moved around a little bit when I was younger. So I think I always end up coming back to, if I have to give one place, it's Oklahoma. I was born and raised in Oklahoma City. And that's where my parents live now again, along with, my older brother. And, but we moved around a bit. So there was in Des Moines, Iowa for 3 years for junior high. And then, the one
that's
that
pivotal,
more,
that's not nothing.
Yeah, junior high, high. Is
important. Yeah.
But then I think even more formative than that would have been my, 4 high school years in San Antonio, Texas, which, you know, spurred on was kind of the reason why I ended up in undergrad, at UNCSA in the first place was because of the theater program that I was at in high school.
Wait, so I just want to clarify this, and this is like kind of semantic for me just because it's interesting, but you said you consider yourself, if you had to pick one place, that you're from Oklahoma, but you spent middle school in Iowa, and then you spent your all of high school in San Antonio. Dude, yeah. I moved to Austin in, I don't know, I think it was like 4th or 5th grade. And I was originally from the Dallas area. I don't tell anyone I'm from Dallas ever because I'm like, I don't remember that shit. It's so funny. The years that you can remember the least are your Oklahoma years, but you're like, I guess I'm from Oklahoma. Cause see, I think of you as from San Antonio. Cause that's what you told me when I met.
Well, yeah. Cause especially in, I mean, at UNCSA, it's like, I had other people like Kat Saffel, who had come from my high school, and I was, you know, Josh Popo was in my class. He and I both went to high school together, and like Mason Hensley in the year below us. So it's like I had other people from my high school. So almost as an easier way of like associating with like, yeah, I'm also from the same place as these people. And at the time, it probably felt more true because I was closer to it. But now it's like, I am further away from living in San Antonio than the entire time I spent living there. And so I think the most truthful thing to say is like, I feel like I'm from New York now because that's what's home, but it's like, yeah, so.
But your origin story does have like a nice Midwestern kind of middle America story for sure. You're not like a grew up in a huge city guy.
Nah.
Right.
It's like the largest city in a place with not large cities. Although Oklahoma City is very nice. Every time I go back,
they're definitely like one comedy club cities. You've got your Des Moines, you've got your Oklahoma, and San Antonio for sure. Mm-hmm. No, they're all. I've been to two of those three cities. They're lovely, but they're not New York. They're not Chicago. They're not Los Angeles. They're not London. You know, these places that sometimes we end up, and now you say you associate so deeply with. So there's definitely an origin story and kind of the flyover states, everyone says respectfully.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So what are the folks doing that is moving you around? Is that why you're moving?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a church household. My dad was the worship pastor at the church where we worked. And having, if you know other kids who grew up in families where their parents worked at the church, it's like those families tend to move around a bit just because like those jobs can change around quite a bit. So
that's so interesting. I haven't had that experience. I didn't have that experience in my own family, but all the people I know, my wife grew up very religious, but they're kind of like in the same neighborhood they've always been in. It feels to me like I've always observed sort of the opposite. Like once you get into a religious community, you're kind of tied locally. It's interesting to hear the opposite.
Well, I think, yeah, it's the difference of being a part of a religious community and being part of like the faculty or the staff of the church, because okay. Then it's tied to like, it's a job, which means then, well, if that congregation decides that what they need is something a little different than what you're doing, well, it's like, great, this is also what you do for work. So if you can't do that here, you got to find someplace else, which then means you got to uproot from where your community was and find a new one. Because that's your job.
That is so like bringing the boss home, man. Like you have to then, what about like your family then? So it's like you get used to going to a Sunday school and knowing a certain teacher. And then all of a sudden it's like, we have to move. And you're like, but I like this lady.
Oh yeah. No, the first time having to move was very much like a, wait, what? This could happen moment.
Cause you don't think you're going to get fired from your church. You're like, we're at church. Right. This is our people that we are going to go to church with. And then all of a sudden they're like, we're leaving.
Oh. And like even more so, I think for us, because like, you know, I was fully homeschooled up until fourth grade. And so not only was the church like, you know, where I went on Sundays, but it's like, I was there on like, you know, all the days of the week. And like, all of my friends were my friends from church. And like, even when I went to a private school for fourth and fifth grade, the school was held at my church and was like 24 kids per grade. Majority of the kids were already people I knew from church. So it's like, this was my entire community. And like 12, like maybe 11, 12 years old when I had to move. And so it's just like everyone who I have known up until then is just like, all right, bye-bye. This is what happens now.
Everyone in your family is working at the church or just one person, your dad?
My dad was the one with the solid job at the church. My mom would help, I think on just like a volunteer basis with like the youth sort of kids part of that, where they would all like send all the kids to like, what do they call it? Sunday school, I think was the term.
Which she used like hilarious that people would be there one day of the week.
More school, like more school.
Must be nice. Sunday school. Great.
Yeah. Which is interesting because now my mom actually, after I think, either while I was still in high school, I think after I graduated high school, ended up going and getting her education to be a teacher, and has been teaching special ed at the elementary school level for, oh gosh, I think it's been like around 8 years or something now.
Great.
It's found a great calling in that. Just like, I mean, I mentioned I was homeschooled, so she was used to teaching has a great passion for just helping kids, especially around that age, especially those who need more attentive care. A very empathetic person, my mother.
What's the dynamic as far as siblings? Are you all alone? Or you got brothers and sisters? What's up?
Nah, no, I've got two older siblings, which my sister Becca is the oldest, and then it was three boys. It was my older brother David, myself, and then my younger brother Nathan. But Nathan passed away back in 2018.
Oh goodness!
Which is always sort of like, it's the fun thing to bring up, like on dates or anytime meeting like a new person. It's like, how do I broach this where the person I'm telling feels the least bit bad about me giving them this information?
You know what I think is the wildest thing about that? I don't have experience directly with like an immediate family death, but I have talked to and had a lot of really close people in my life who've gone through that. And as a curious person, I've had a lot of these conversations about what it's like to experience something like that. Specifically, that thing that you just mentioned is what everybody goes through, especially if you have like a sibling or a parent who passes. A parent, it seems to be the more common thing. You know, my parent died when I was in middle school or even high school or undergrad. It's very young usually. And It is so interesting to me that the cultural dynamic we have created puts it on you to make us more comfortable with the grief that you have to suffer, which is wild. You're over here playing mental gymnastics, trying to go, how do I let them know I'm in my own place with it. They don't need to do anything. They don't have to perform for me or give me a this or that, but I can't not mention it because they keep saying parents, they keep saying siblings. And I feel like an asshole for not correcting them. It's a weird and terrible place we put people in.
And, it, and I mean, it's a very common thing to talk about, like, one's family. It's like one of like the it's the easy lowball first questions. You're like, tell me about your family. Like, do you have siblings? Do you have parents? You got kids?
Yeah, we're only like what, 15 minutes in and I'm already there.
I know. And especially because like, to go back to sort of, I think, part of the original question is like, I'm very close with my siblings. I mean, we are very tight. We were all very close in age, like no more than like a year and a half between any one of us,
Wow, okay.
from one to the next.
And remind me, I kind of lost track. How many total?
Four down to three. So it was sister, three boys.
Got it.
Yeah. So, like my, nowadays, my two older siblings and I, our big way that we keep in touch is for years now, we have had a D&D game that we have done over like video call. We had one campaign that we had going for like, I think a couple years that my sister was DMing, and my sister's an amazing DM. And now we're doing one like on an every other week schedule, that my brother's
DMing. When did you start doing that?
Like, oh gosh. I mean, I started playing probably while at school, but we started our game maybe a year or so into me having been in the city. So sometime back in, I would guess around 16 or 17.
And you've played with Brandon, right?
Oh,
with
God, his, it's like, been a hot minute.
Epic, like, I have played, 11 year, 12 year, however long they've been playing.
A little bit. Because I know all those people so well, and so many of them are some of my very close friends in my community here in New York. But I've guest appeared in that campaign a couple times because, I mean, I'm sure you're aware, like, the absolute massive size of that group got to, and it's just like there's a certain level where it becomes so impractical, and it's like I am not contributing positively to this experience by adding like a 10th person that now have people gotta wait for me to do my thing too.
You can't do Infinity War every movie.
No, you can't.
It's too many people. We gotta break up and have our little things, and then we'll assemble at some other time, you know? I think that totally makes sense, and I think it's cool that you have that. I also love hearing about those, you know, the kind of sub communities that happen after people go to a place like School of the Arts, and specifically that one, obviously I've talked to people the most, but it's like you end up with these little groups that have like a lot of people from school in them, but they may be half or majority not people from school, but it feels like this amalgam of like, oh, I'm still kind of with the crew, but the crew has become this weird group of, you know, orc fighting people.
Mm-hmm. Very much that. No, it's I think that probably Brandon Harris might be kind of responsible for most of the people who I know now. Just like, even as if I didn't meet them through him, it's like he was sort of coming directly out of school, like the gateway social butterfly who, like, you know how he is, it just like invites you to the big party and it's like, here's all the people I know and love, take your pick, is his whole thing that he does. And so It was a great thing to have coming directly out of school, like someone just willing to be open and inviting. And like, especially like I'm not the best in brand new social situations. And so having some kind of an in is great.
What does that mean?
Throw me into a group of a bunch of people I don't know with zero like situational context for why I'm there, and I'm just like, all right, I don't feel comfortable.
I think I'm one of the more charismatic people that I know, and also the most humble, but I feel immodest, but I feel like, dude, that situation you just described is like my worst nightmare. I fucking hate that. When I first moved to LA, and I'll give you a story to kind of balance it out so you don't think you're like all alone in any kind of social anxiety, because man, I hate that. That is like my, and I don't understand why anyone invites people to that. I just don't get it. And maybe you have to be a certain kind of person. Brandon would be fucking great at this. And it's one of those things that he's so good at. And I'm like, how do you, whatever. I'm not built this way. I moved out here. I met some girl at a gig and I wanted to hang out with her. And so I asked her out and she said, I just moved into a new apartment and I'm having a housewarming party. Come to that. And I was like, no. Like, absolutely not. You're saying you want me to come the first time we're hanging out outside of meeting you and we're going to like get to know each other, maybe head down the dating path. You want me to come hang out in a world that is not only your literal home turf, but it's all of your like friends. And I don't know anybody. And I'm not going to bring anyone with me. I'm trying to hook up with this girl. So like now I'm alone, like holding a beer in the corner. Like, when am I going to get my time to talk to the person that everybody else wants their attention? This is like, what? No, I'm old enough to know fucking no, I'm not doing this. And don't make me feel obligated. Like, well, if you don't want to hang out in the group thing, I'm like, no, I just want to get to know you. And that's not going to happen. Watching a TV show about you. That's what the fuck this is going to be.
Yeah, people just come up to you and you're like, so you got any siblings?
That is so good, dude. That is so good. Yeah, exactly. That's always the first question.
God.
You're like, it is late.
It's like, doesn't thank God, I can talk about my dead brother. This at least will get the conversation going someplace.
Right, exactly. Everyone will be surrounding me in a few moments talking about my favorite thing. That's so crazy. Okay, so are the other siblings artsy people, the creative stuff, or are you like the weird artsy kid?
No, I mean, actually, we all are in our own way, obviously all very nerdy.
That's not obvious to me.
I thought you might be a game.
Well, I thought maybe you're the nerd that brought them into it because they love you, and it's possible. So my family cooperates with my weird shit.
Interestingly enough, we all started playing D&D separately from one another before we played together. Yeah, obviously, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. But my sister, I always associate with her growing up that she was like this talented artist and writer, very good at writing just kind of anything like prose, fiction, things of that nature. And went to SCAD for a hot second for sequential art for deciding that wasn't really her speed. But that was sort of her vibe all growing up. And then my older brother after very long story, very abbreviated down to got in the Navy, went through boot camp, and then left Navy. Used sort of whatever, what is it, GI Bill or whatever people use post that to go to grad school for film down in Orlando, and did that for a couple of years. So we were the artsy cousins in our family. All of our other cousins are like doctors.
Do you guys make shit together?
We haven't really, which is the interesting thing. And I think it's because we had some kind of different things. Although I guess you could say like the thing that we make together is our D&D campaign at this point.
That's true. Like, yeah. I don't mean to put that out, but I meant like more conventional art. But like that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, because I think I want to say we talked about like maybe trying to do something a couple times, but it's hard to organize with people who live in the same place as you to make a thing.
Totally. I think about it all the time. I want to make stuff with people like Brandon and you and other. And I'm like, I don't, you know, other than some cheesy pandemic Zoom movie, and I don't want to do that because it's already been done terribly like 150 times. And I'm fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you wait for that new idea and then the resources to get everybody in the same place for it is tough. But man, you are, and I always give this preface and then I end up doing it, but we don't talk about stuff at the school very often, but I want to talk about something really quick. You know, being at school at the time that we were, which is really like the tail end of the Gerald Friedman era into Carl Forsman being in charge of the drama school. And I feel like there was a lot of room for people to create things on their own, but it was far and away not a requirement of the program. You could easily do what was assigned to you. That was a lot. And if you did that, no one was going to be like, you lazy piece of shit. Like, just be a good actor, be a good singer, like, do your thing. And people would be like, right on. However, there would be people who would just seem to devour the opportunity to make things outside of what was assigned to them. And man, are you one of those people? You just absolutely kept making shit from the time that you got there. Your every year intensive arts was something different from you. We did a play together that was like a brand new thing that you had worked on, that was like kind of the launch of Keys to the Kingdom in a way, and that whole wave of getting that student produced stuff going in less than...
Yeah, ours was the first year doing that under that name anyway,
Yeah, and before that, it was really like How I Learned to Drive a few years ago, Open the Space, and then a few other things had started creating that, continued, as I understand it, a culture of self-creation on a very regular basis. And so I think it's really, first of all, I think it's really cool that you're a part of that. But second, I want to say, where is that energy going into the D&D game? Are you still, I'll be more specific. Are you still composing musicals? Are you still intent on creating stage works or writing in that same capacity? Or are you focused on very different things at this point?
Yeah. So musicals themselves, not really at the moment. There had been some projects that I've been working on since I got to the city, and actually working at writing musicals was basically my primary focus since I got to New York, up until basically when the pandemic started, honestly. And I really, it's just been like, since then, I've very much shifted my sort of day-to-day sort of professional self energy into very different directions.
Which are what?
Yeah. Right now I've switched into software engineering.
You know how to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you know how to do that?
So the pandemic gave me a lot of time to be on the internets, baby.
You taught yourself how to be a software engineer, and now you're making money doing it?
Kind of, yeah. So what happened was I've always been interested in software engineering, and like, you know, even though I was doing writing musical theater and stuff, you need the day job. So I had one that had been working fine for years, but then started working less fine. Like, what else could I do? And like, I had friends who were software engineers, and like, I like that kind of work. Like, I'd done stuff like it a bit before. Like, I wrote like HTML website for my high school theater group.
I remember that. I was learning that for a minute, because you had to learn it to use MySpace.
Yeah. I think I did it for like my Neopets Guild or something originally.
Yeah, dude, Neopets, yeah. Virtual high five, bro. Yes, let's go.
So, you know, a pandemic hits, and my day job went down the toilet for a while because it was catering, and obviously there weren't any events happening. So I was home with a lot of time. And I'm like, I will never have this much time to sit and just pick up this skill for real. So I started getting into it, took some free online courses, got really into it, and actually sort of made it my very conscious trajectory to move into that professionally, because I really, really took the work and really loved it. Like, I'm always been very technically minded.
Obviously.
Like, the ultimate goal with it is I would love to, I want to move into the video game space. My first big accomplishment back in like 2021 was like, I made my own like Metroidvania that I did all like this retro pixel art for, that like takes a couple hours to play through. And like, that's probably the last music I wrote, was writing the music for the game, which was
that you designed.
Yeah. And I think it was a very similar sense of gratification that I felt making that and feeling the fulfillment of that, very similar to when doing KGB Honeymoon, the musical that we did when I was at school. Was like, I love taking this sort of comprehensive view of like making a thing, bringing it about, making it happen, and feeling that like, I could have that feeling in this theatrical space, and then also have it in this very different space that ends up using a lot of the same skills and but getting to tap into a little bit other parts of my interests. When my job came back, I sort of made an exit strategy, went to a boot camp to sort of kickstart getting into this professionally. And out of my boot camp, I now, me and one of my cohort mates, have made a mobile app that has been his brainchild for like 8 years. And we just released it onto the App Store like 2 months ago. And literally just today, finally got it on the Google Play Store. So we are officially on both stores.
Great. Congrats, man.
So it's been an interesting couple of years.
What does this app do that you made?
Yeah, so the app is called Bantu, which comes from the phrase band together, so B-A-N-D-T-O. And it is a tool to help make professional networking more effective and accessible to people.
Okay.
Sort of the idea being that, like, you know, in this capitalist world in which we live, everybody got to work. Most common effective ways of getting work are by knowing the right people. In order to know the right people, you got to do professional networking, the thing that everybody loves. The thing is that it's oftentimes fucking hard. And it's especially hard if, like, you are entering a new industry, like if you're just coming out of school, or like if, like I was over the past couple of years, entering a new field and a career change. And like for all of the people I know who are, you know, freelancer gig workers of all this kind, have to be constantly meeting new people in order to make their jobs continue to progress. And so the app is really designed to be a tool to help make it so that you can walk into kind of any space and have some means of knowing who you should be talking to. And sort of the way that that kind of works is we have what we call signals, which are just points of connection that display on our map. And when you join them, you are able to quickly share what you do and how people can work with you with everyone else who is also connected there. So you can do this like at any public space. So at like your coffee shop in the morning, you can hop on a signal there. At the park on your day off, you can do it at like a performance venue when you're going to see a show. So that's kind of the basic idea. And then beyond public spaces, any person, any user can make their own custom signals to attach to either their brand or their company, their organization, anything that you want, your book club. Put that up, throw up the bat signal, as it were, and now you are also on the map to be discovered and followed by other people. And then people who want to follow you can then network with each other. So bottom line, it's kind of trying to make it so that individual people have another tool in their kit in order to access the people who comprise their industry, wherever they are, specifically in real space is a big thing for us, and be able to have their industry be able to find them visibly and allow the existing networks that already exist in communities to make use of each other more effectively. So
I love this, and I'm going to ask you a question that you are not going to like, but I think it's helpful for everybody if you answer it. Cool.
Great.
The question is, if you had to take that and pare it down to, it's essentially this app, it's except blank is different about it. This is what it offers you that one does, kind of like that. And I only frame it that way because A, I say you're not going to like it because I assume you got a brand new thing that's your own thing. You don't want it to be compared to anything at all. How you'd love it to be. Oh my God, it's a brand new idea that nobody's ever thought of. On second thought, though, we all have too many fucking apps on our phone already. So you got to tell me which one I kind of need to delete in order to have yours. So that's why I'm kind of giving you there's this little fun challenge. So what app is it? Except this one is going to do this because I think I got it. I really do. And I love the geographical part of it.
Yeah. So I'm going to take this and maybe do what you asked for.
Okay. Thank you.
It is like the way that I've liked to distill it down is it is like LinkedIn meets Pokemon Go.
Ooh, dude, that's a good fucking answer. A good fucking answer. And I think that makes a lot of sense for anyone who knows about those two things. That is so immediate.
Yeah, because the thing that was so great about the Pokemon Go is such a vibe, like such a whole fucking thing.
It still is.
Yeah, and it was that thing of making such wonderful use of proximity and where people are in real space relation to each other. Because I mean, especially like, I feel like this was something that people touched into a lot more deeply during the pandemic. Our local communities that we have and the people that we are able to relate to in real spaces have a kind of different quality and weight and matter in a different way, kind of. I mean, we have gotten so good at being able to connect digitally anywhere, however much, but being able to have those real in-space things, I think just as human creatures crawling on this planet, it feels different.
I think you're right.
In a good way.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know,
I also appreciate that you don't go out of your way to say that it's more significant or better. You're just really pointing out that it's a different kind of connection. And I think that that's an important distinction to make.
Oh, yeah. Because then there's also so many connections that just wouldn't be possible to, like, my friggin' D&D game with my siblings, which is deeply important to my connection to these two humans that I love so much and have known my entire ass life. I wouldn't be able to have this without this purely digital way that we have of keeping in touch over the different states we live in.
And it's both valuable, deep, and emotional to you, but it is different.
Yeah. It is different. I mean, if we could play in person every other week, I would prefer that probably.
Sure.
But yeah,
but you also don't have to get anybody out of your house any quicker than bye, click. That is, there's some benefits. There's some pluses and minuses.
You are
for
not
sure.
lying there. Yeah, and then obviously the LinkedIn connection, because people, I think, understand when they, when I think professional networking, if I have to point to an app, like that's the one you think of.
Yeah.
It's like the whole thing.
And I think that we constantly find shortcomings of that app while it has value. I do think it's the most quickly abandoned by people who make a profile and go, what is this doing for me? And then bail. It's not flashy to the eye. So you're not spending that much time scrolling unless you're a real hustler. Let me read every article that was written by it's got its value, but it feels like a fucking resume bulletin board sometimes.
Which, and this is an interesting thing, because you phrase it in terms of like, what is the thing like I can get rid of off my phone for this? And I think one of actually the strengths of the app that we've been working on is like, fortunately for us, kind of, it's not really directly butting heads against anything that's already there. If anything, this is a tool so that you've already spent hours, days refining this expansive resume on LinkedIn. How about we give you this tool so that the right people can actually see it. Because you can just put a little link to your LinkedIn profile, your Instagram profile in our app, very minimalist, lightweight profiles, because it's just designed to foster those connections. You've spent all of your time creating
somewhere
your
else, connecting
elsewhere.
With them.
Yeah. So this is just making those connections happen. I mean, honestly, I've loved working with Caleb on this project. And one of the great sort of things was we were talking about like, what is going to be our metric for success for this during a lot of our early days working on it. And like the thing that we would come back to is like, if we can get two people to make a professional connection and like end up, you know, making money out of this, just two people who would not have otherwise met, then like, we've kind of done what we were hoping to do. So,
that's a good bar to set for yourself, man, because while it may seem low to some people, I think a lot of people, you know, we see the same kind of stuff of like, you know, if I write this book, which took me fucking 600 hours or whatever, if I write this book and one person reads it and it gives them hope or it makes them laugh or blah, 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 fill in the blank. Like, I think we've all kind of said that sentence and you hear it, I think, sometimes as someone who's not involved in that process and you're like, really fucking that much 600 hours for one guy to be like, ha, good job, you know, like, yeah, but it's, I think that there is something to really be said about how hard it is to do that thing that you're trying to accomplish. That's the point. Mm. So it's almost like proving an equation true. Like if you end up getting the result when you plug it in that you wanted to get, you're like, oh shit, we kind of cracked it. Whether or not this turns into anything is the next thought. But the first thought is, can we crack the code of this thing that we're trying to accomplish that doesn't seem to exist already?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, just on like some of the note, like I going into the tech field from an artistic place, it's like I understood like long game, I want to be able to like
have my own indie game studio and just like make funky things and just like have a grand old time. But I'm going to have to make money first. I have to support myself. That's not the starting point. So I'm like, okay, what soul sucking tech bro led enterprise am I going to need to sell my soul to for how long before I can maneuver myself into sort of the thing I'm trying to go towards? And like, I lucked out right out the gate, like getting to work with a friend on a project that I think matters, that has a mission I can get behind, that is like the entire reason Caleb came up with this is like he grew up south side of Chicago. He didn't have enough money to go to college when he like got out of high school, so had zero prospects or anything he was able to do, and just like needed a way to get work and pay his rent, and like needed a job, didn't have one, didn't have connections. And over the years has come up with this idea to have something to, as he's verbalized it, to give kind of his 17-year-old self a chance when he didn't have the tools to do that. And it's just like, yeah, I can get behind that. It's like, I know so many people who are like in the gig economy world who, if they had more means to kind of foster their communities in more of an effective way, how much of a benefit that could be for them. And it's like, yeah, I love that I get to spend my time doing this instead of, you know, all of the other things I could be doing.
I love that, dude. I think that's so awesome. I have a few other extra things that I want to get to before we run out of time. One of them is kind of a, like, I want to fill in an act one question that I kind of glazed past, especially after hearing all this. I'm actually even more fascinated to hear the answer, because I'm like hearing all of this about the nerd in you, man. Let me get to the fat of it. Like, you're the D&D. Uh-huh. You're a composer. You're not just an actor. You're a composer. Composing is fucking hard. It's very left brain. It's very like in, you know, at the paper or at the keys by yourself. There's only so much composing you can do with another person unless you have a very symbiotic relationship. So you've got some isolation there. You've talked about social anxieties that you have, entering new situations with new people. And now you're working in the tech world, literally software engineering, which, yeah, you might be getting notes and collaborating, but man, that's a lot of by yourself. Mm-hmm. Dude, how the fuck did you end up at fucking acting school? Like, why acting? That's the most extroverted fucking, hey, I'm on stage, look at me. And dude, I've seen you on stage. I think you're a talented person. Do not get me wrong. I'm just saying, like, it's so interesting that of all of these different things, you didn't go to engineering school. You didn't go to music school. You incidentally composed musicals at a school that's not even a musical theater school. It's a fucking conservatory for like classical acting. How did that happen?
I mean, that, to bring it back to the point that you were saying of junior high being significant.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to write a book about that.
I mean, let's just tie in a bunch of things that we've touched on, like my upbringing being mostly homeschooled until you know, the private school with 24 kids per grade, who I already knew all of them, and then being supplanted from everything that I knew into a new place, social anxieties combined with
middle child
puberty and being in junior high in a new place, not knowing anybody, and then being tossed into public school system for the very first time. I was having to learn how to function socially very quickly and was not good at it. And it was really not until I, in trying to hang out more with a kid who I thought was like really cool, who was doing stuff at a children's theater, I'm like, I'll audition for that show too. Cause that seems cool. Did High School Musical at a children's theater in, I think it was like Altoona, Iowa. And it was like going into rehearsals for that show was the first time that it just felt natural, like in terms of being in a space that I felt comfortable,
and was around people who were like engaged with me and like excited to have me there. I didn't feel weird around them. And like, I got to contribute to making this thing with them. And it just sort of became that kind of like drive of like, oh, I just need to be here all the time and like doing this thing. And like, I was a musical person. I love my siblings and I, like the theatrical aspect has always been there because like we were, again, homeschooled, playing make-believe out in our backyard every day, coming up with all of these like Boxcar Children-esque adventures in our backyard.
It's like borderline Mormon, this story.
Yeah, I know. Getting to do all of those things with all these people and have that be my in and being able to connect with other people in a way that I had been struggling to really locked me into that. So then when I went down to San Antonio, Texas, it was the matter that the high school I went to had an excellent theater program that specifically they knew how to help you get.
There was a pipeline.
Schools. Yeah. So like I locked in, it's like, great, I'm doing this. This is what I want to do. I got so much ritual fulfillment out of that. So like it just all kind of fell into a track that took me straight through school. Yeah. And then all of the other things was just like, here's all these other things I also like doing. And being at UNCSA, I will always point to the freedom to be able to make your own original things outside the context of your classes was one of the things I'll be the most grateful that I got to do. That they provided, even if it was just like structurally just providing like every year intensive arts, and I think Project Love were the two institutionally set aside times for that. That I just like.
And Project Love was probably only like 5 or 6 years old by the time you got there.
Yeah,
it wasn't something that was like age old either. So there used to be one.
Yeah. So having that opportunity and that invitation to like get to do that is. You know, it's interesting in how that's how I found like, oh, maybe not the acting is the main focus, but like, you gotta go where, you know, you gotta go.
Where they let you make stuff too. I mean, you so clearly needed the space to do that and you had it, which also it kind of explains why you didn't get halfway through and go, oh, the acting is maybe not the career that I want, and then bail. Like you couldn't leave because you're like, never have I had a better fucking laboratory to work.
Yeah.
And if I have to keep going to acting classes and be like, oh yeah, when I get to the city, I can't wait to audition at Abrams and be a blah, blah, whatever. Even if that in the back of your head, you're like, I don't know. Like, yeah, maybe I'll try it real quick at Showcase. And if everyone's like, we got to have you, kid, I'm not going to say no. But at the same time, I'm like, I have all of these other things that I'm like, I think I'm fucking good at this. And I really should be spending my time on it. I have to say, dude, and I'm so glad that I get a chance to talk to you. And if I like drunkenly already told you this at a party, hear me out anyway, but I'm going to tell you this thing. It's a very big deal for me. And it speaks to all the stuff you just said about, how important it is that even at this classical conservatory that we had room to make things, I had so much confidence going into the directing program with Gerald in like a few categories. And then most of the categories, I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, which is why I was there to learn. But there are a few areas where I'm like, I'm funny. I know how to make things funny, make it funnier. I think I can read a script and kind of hear the scene. I can hear the dialogue and like, it comes to life for me. So that's kind of a thing. I have a couple of strengths, but one of my biggest weaknesses, going into being a director and even kind of as an actor, I'm not great at seeing it. I'm a pretty visual person with what I appreciate, but when I read a script, it's almost like I hear it like an audio play, and it doesn't like come to visual life for me. I don't see people walking on stage, making entrances and exits. I never have. For my whole life of reading a script raw, I was like, I don't know, but I hear the voices. I can hear the accents and all that stuff. It just happens. I go through all of Gerald's directing program saying this to him. I'm like, yeah, this is my big concern. We study classical art with Gerald. That's a big part of trying to learn scale, you know, fucking golden rule ratio, all this stuff. Like we literally learn the actual rules of it. And I'm still kind of like, I feel like I don't fucking know how to put anything on stage. I could read a script and we could do it at the table. And if it stays at the table, I'm going to put on a fucking hell of a show. But if we have to stand up and if I have to like pick a set, this is going to be a nightmare. I need somebody else to do it. I need like a set designer who's a fucking prodigy. Who's going to be like, here's what we do. And he knows how to put the actors on it too. And I'm like, great, let's go. Say it the way we talked about. So I went with this insecurity the whole time I'm there. I graduate. I go to Comedy Central in New York and work in TV. I come back and we end up working on KGB Honeymoon, the musical that you wrote, which is essentially, for anyone listening, I'm going to sum it up really quick. And Noah did not know this at the time. I can vouch for that directly. It's essentially the first season of the show, The Blacklist, if it were a musical, like almost exactly the plot line. It was just osmosis. He didn't mean to. It was happening like at a different time. But the whole, like, I'm really a spy. We're really both kind of spies, sort of. Like that whole thing is like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but it's really The Blacklist. Anyway, Noah wrote a fucking, you have to watch it. It's going to blow your mind. And the guy, Ryan Eggold's on it, who's so fucking cute. You're going to have a very good time watching this show. It's a lot of fun. The first season and then walk away. You have to walk away after season one, just because it's like eight and they dangle the like big question mark. Walk away one season.
I can commit to one season.
That's your show. And then beyond that, it loses what it's doing. Anyway, that's not the point. The point of the story is we're working on KGB Honeymoon and it is a new musical that you've written. That is, I think it, correct me if I'm wrong, it is the most like kind of full and complete thing that you've made at that point. Cause a lot of what you've been doing is what do you call those when people just kind of sing cycles? Songs? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You've written some beautiful music and people kind of stood at music stands and done them, but it has acts to it. It has a full arc of a story, fleshed out characters. Mm-hmm. And you brought it to me in 2015 after I'd been out for a couple of years and moved on and never really felt good about it for reasons that I cannot explain to everyone right now. We ended up with a very, very weird and limited ability to rehearse this play. We spent a lot of time working on the music. We spent a lot of time at the table. Back of my head, I'm like, we're doing this in the fucking room that used to be a movie theater. It's not even a fucking theater yet. And we're trying to figure out how to do it for like no money and stage it. And then we end up with one day to stage it.
Uh-huh.
We had to go to showcase for you. Come back. I went with you. We came back. It was one day to stage this whole new musical we've been working on. And then we're going to do it the next night. I think we had like 5 hours, 6 hours, something like that on a Saturday or some shit, whatever.
I remember that. Yeah.
And we started at the beginning. I hadn't written anything down. I didn't really have anything planned. And just simply as if I had a little mini stage and little people, I just was like, all right, you and boom. And then we blocked it like end to end fast. Uh-huh. And we were done early. And I was like, we finished it. And it wasn't just like, oh wow, they came on and they left. There was fucking symbolism in the blocking. There was like symmetrical Wes Anderson shit. It was like pretty good. It's still to this day, like maybe one of the better things I've ever like blocked or arranged ever. And we got to the end and I was like, holy shit, we're done. And you're like, we're done. And I was like, we wrote it all down. And whoever was like, yeah, we got it all down. The actors had it in their scripts. And I was like, so everyone knows where to go? And they were like, yeah. I was like, I know how to do it. I do know how to do it. Like, I learned how to do it. I already graduated and it had been 2 fucking years. I still didn't think I knew the skill set. But I finally actually got to put it to this test in my best environment for me personally, which is like hyper compressed with fucking high stress and like high stakes. I make the best shit. Fucking diamonds, you know, in the pressure. And it is, I am to this day, what I'm saying is thank you. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to have had that space and that time to learn that I didn't fucking blow it on learning how to do shit, and that somehow it made it in there, at least in the crunch of it. It's in there somewhere. I may not always do a good job, but I know how to do it. And honestly, I don't think it would have come about if it hadn't been a fucking well-written script. It was well-written. It was good. It was fun to figure out. That symbolism shit I described, it was like available to be symbolized. If it wasn't, we couldn't have fucking brought that visually to life. And I still think about it. I still think about doing that show. I still think about learning that lesson that day. And I don't get a lot of opportunities to say thank you for that. So that's what I'm doing.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, man. I didn't know that. I still very keenly remember like that day of blocking in that process, where it's like, I didn't even know going into that rehearsal that we were going to stage it. I thought it was just going to be like, and here's how we're going to be at the stands. And it's like, oh no, we're staging it. All right, let's go.
Because we thought we couldn't, because we're like, it was one day to block the whole play. We can't do that. I mean, this wasn't a fucking 3-hour production.
Yeah.
It was shorter, right. But still it wasn't nothing. And there were a lot of scenes, and the set, like it went from like an office to the park, to the house, to the, it, there was like 4 different sets. We had 5 pieces of furniture, but it, and you know, 3 lights that kind of came, it was nothing, but it was, it ended up being really good. The lighting person we worked with made it amazing. It might have, for reasons that may come up on another episode of a podcast at another time, be one of the most emotionally stressful weeks of my entire life. And yet it was one of the best things I think I've ever made. And I'm so grateful that I had your material in that moment, because man, I've done a lot of other stuff before and since that I really needed it to be good. I needed it emotionally to be a good piece of material. And it just wasn't. Or the people involved just weren't in the right place. And it keeps you from taking for granted those moments when you're like, man, all the math done at the end of the day, that was an incredibly valuable experience and a good fucking piece of work. I don't know if you just like threw that on a shelf or what, or if you ever want to do anything with it again, but it's fucking good.
Oh God, that would be so fun to revisit that. Yeah. I mean, I will always be grateful to you and everyone who was a part of that for making that happen. It, easily the highlight of my time at school.
And it shouldn't have happened. Like with all the cards we were dealt trying to do that.
Like, both in school and like out of school, just in the world, those things, it's like, how the fuck did we make this work? It's like, those things are just so special and tasty. I love them.
Yeah. And now you're doing it in a totally different field, which is really cool, because you undoubtedly have a completely different problems to solve. And I think that, I don't know, I think it's a cool thing that you're doing this, but I think no matter what you work on, if you stay on this app and move on to something else, either way, it is a blessing to anyone working with you that you have the critical thinking that you do and that you have the breadth of experience across creation. Because, man, I don't know, the farther I get, I always had this theory, but I'm finding more and more that whether or not you make your living as a hyphenate, I just don't think about that a lot. But whether or not you make yourself as a hyphenate for the sake of knowing how to do a lot of shit and then letting that inform everything that you do, because it's not like you composing and acting and doing all these different things doesn't lend itself in all these little weird ways to doing what you're doing now. It always does. It's unavoidable because it's like what you know. And I don't know. It's a good thing. It's a good thing that anybody's working with you, that they have you there, because you bring a lot to the table in that way.
Those are nice words. Thanks, man.
Well, I'm not here just to kiss your ass. There's people that I truly admire as far as the way that they make stuff. And then there's other people that I just don't know as well. I couldn't say one way or the other, but I've like made stuff with you. And I know what it's like to stand next to you as we're like, fuck, how do we do this? That's a special relationship you just ended up sharing with all that many people. So I'm just speaking a little bit to you, but I'm also speaking to anyone listening about your character, that you're also a very modest and humble person. And so I want to make sure that they know. Here's the last thing I'll leave you with. And I don't know if you know about this, and I'm telling everyone in the world about this right now because it's my favorite thing and it couldn't be more relevant to you. I just found a new musical group that I really like. Do you know about Scary Pockets?
I do not know.
I'm so excited to share them with you. I think you will really like them. There's this guy named Jack Conti. He is the CEO of Patreon. So he's kind of in the app tech business.
A little bit there.
A little bit. He has several musical projects because I think I haven't looked into his fucking bio. I don't care. But it's clear. He has a very strong musical background. He seems to primarily play the keyboards. He has a group called Scary Pockets, which is a rotating funk cover band. And they always have new different musicians singing. And so it's like him and one other guy, I think, are the steady members. But the group can have upwards of like 10 people in it at once, as far as like having some little backup singers and stuff. They do the fucking best funk covers and they produce at such a great volume. Like they're always putting out new shit. I'm not going to lie, dude. I actually was, as I found them, it was a few months ago. I thought about you. Cause I was like, I talked to Steven and we had talked about the app thing. And I was like, this is going to be fucking Noah. He's going to be the CEO of whatever the fuck. Daytime, but on the weekend he's like jamming with all these fucking people making music and doing his other thing, because I also think he puts everything out for free because they're covers, so he can't make a lot of money off of it without licensing the tracks. So but he's like, I'm a CEO of Patreon, who gives a fuck, here you go, this move money's
that's
free.
I'll the dream, pay the musicians, you know?
go into tech, make however many billions of dollars, we'll be modest and say like 50. And then write whatever brings me joy.
All right. Well, here's the thing, man. When you get that Jack Conti Bezos money and you've got your projects going, you let me block it if on occasion and maybe play the drums and I'll never ask you for anything else.
Hell yeah.
Sounds like a deal.
Amazing.
Noah, you're the best. I'm so excited that we got to catch up. Thank you for doing the show. Yeah. And I wish I had some like parting words, but I was already way too nice to you. So I feel like I have to fucking
tone
anymore.
It down, to be perfectly honest.
All right. Well, thanks for doing the show, you piece of shit.
Thanks, Rob. You're all right.